Now, South Sudan's armed opposition says that it has replaced its leader weeks after he fled the capital following fierce clashes with the government forces there. Riek Machar, who's also the first vice president in the unity government, has been replaced with rebels' chief negotiator, Taban Deng. Now, the opposition says that Deng will serve only until Machar returns to the capital, Juba, but spokesman for Machar, who's also in hiding, has condemned the replacement as a, quote, conspiracy to overthrow Machar. He says Machar has already fired Deng over holding unilateral talks with the government, and therefore he can't take up any formal position within the opposition. Deng rejects the claim, saying that the party can no longer go on without a leader. And now we're going to swing over to Baltimore, where we're joined by Mr. Lawrence Freeman. He's an African affairs expert. Welcome to the program, Mr. Freeman. Now, Riek Machar has been replaced rather than negotiated with, although he's been asked to return to Juba for talks by President Kiir, but he chooses to remain in hiding. How tangled is this situation in the world's youngest nation?
This is very serious. This is very dangerous. The fact that the leader of the opposition of the SPLM-IO, Riek Machar, who's also the first vice president, is now no longer in control, and that someone who worked for him, a general, has now, General Deng Gai, has now taken over, shows you that the organization of these parties is already fractured. And unfortunately, I think it portends that we will see more splits, more fracturing, and therefore no one will be able to control the fighters, and therefore we can expect possibly more violence and killing.
Right, and the United States played a significant role in the split of the country, which led to the creation of South Sudan. Now, that independence was 5 years ago, I believe last July 7th or 8th, a couple weeks ago. And the country has seen an internal conflict since 2013. You do the math, most of their independence has been mired in conflict. Why is it nearly impossible to find a country that's better off after undergoing U.S. intervention?
Well, the country achieved independence on July 9th, 2011. And I myself was trying to convince people in Washington that this was not a good idea. But there was a faction, a cabal in Washington, of which our Susan Rice, the current National Security Advisor, was part of, that they wanted and organized for many, many years, 5, 10, 15 years, to create a separate South Sudan. But they were completely unconcerned about the people of South Sudan. They saw it as a means to bring down North Sudan, to bring down Khartoum, to break up the National Congress Party, and to carry out regime change against President Omar al-Bashir. That was their intention. And the reason you're seeing the failing of this country after 5 years is because it was not really adequately prepared to be a country. To be a country, to be a sovereign nation, you have to provide for your people so that the people see a benefit from the government, that there's an improvement in the general welfare of the people. And of course, South Sudan was completely underdeveloped, no infrastructure, no production, very poor agriculture, even though the potential is great. And after separation occurred on July 9, 2011, I urged people in Washington to go ahead with massive infrastructure development. And they cut South Sudan off. And now they've cut them off completely. So this is unfortunately a predictable event, what happens when you force a people to become a country when they're not prepared to, and they would have been far better off working out their differences with North Sudan, which is what I propose to do.
And ironically enough, sir, it's one of the most, it's been considered one of the most underreported conflicts throughout the world, which causes problems for getting foreign aid from other countries or getting any kind of aid when it's underreported in Western media.
Well, of course, right now, we don't know how many people have been killed in the course of the 5 years of independence. Certainly, it's over tens of thousands. It's probably in the hundreds of thousands. Plus, you have 2 million possibly displaced people. Plus, you have hundreds of thousands who have gone to the neighboring countries, Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, North Sudan, to migrate. And then, of course, you have a report that two-thirds of the people, 8 million out of 12 million, are food insecure, and 4.8 million are severely, acutely food insecure. So you're looking at a genocidal death in South Sudan that could have been prevented, and the West has to be held responsible for their part in it.
And that's what I say. In Washington, when this faction was making these decisions to split the country, there's actually, you're saying, no real contingency plan set up for the development or the future of South Sudan. It was just, what, set to fend for itself?
No, I'm saying something far more worse than that. I'm saying that they created South Sudan knowing that the conditions were there, were not there for a sovereign nation. And they were hoping to use South Sudan, especially their control of the oil fields, to bring down Khartoum, to use for regime change against President Omar al-Bashir, which they've been unsuccessful over the previous 20 years. It was far more cynical and far more vicious than simply not knowing what to do.
Thank you. That's a very powerful input. Very powerful. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence Freeman. You had a firsthand account of this as it unfolded. So I want to thank you for your firsthand account of this incident. That was Mr. Lawrence Freeman, African affairs expert, joining us out of Baltimore.